from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, that is. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, April 8th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Either yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. What do you say? Come on. Straighten your backbone, put a smile on your face, keep a prayer on your lips, and take a deep breath. That all helps, believe me. I've been there, done that, and I own the T-shirt. Let's get things officially started with...
The Daily Datagram.
Yeah, got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. This is an old line, but I thought it was appropriate because I want to illustrate something. There are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all the crew. Having said that, perhaps it's time to get the crew some training.
Houston, we have a problem.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the big blogcast.
Twisted history.
That's what I'm talking about.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
To be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. Think that's ever going to happen. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1935, the Works Progress Administration, known as the WPA, was formed when the Emergency Relief Appropriation Act of 1935 became law. The idea here was to put a lot of people to work during the Great Depression. And as it turned out, the WPA built a lot of courthouses and city halls throughout the country, a good many of them still standing. Oh, yeah, Another great WPA project was at the San Jacinto Monument. It's about, 15, 18 miles east of downtown Houston? The spot where General Santa Anna was finally defeated by General Sam Houston. One of my favorite places. By the way, that's San Jacinto Monument is taller than the Washington Monument in Washington. It's the tallest freestanding monument in the world. There you go. You think I've done enough Texas bragging?
Finally, some censorship we can get behind.
I don't know if you've noticed, but ever since Joe Biden became our president, he and Barack Obama, who's actually running the White House from behind the scenes, have been trying to tell Americans what to drive. They've been trying to force us into electric vehicles, and they've got these mandates that are pending that would outlaw the sale of gas-powered cars by... Oh, it depends on which state we're talking about, 2030 or 2035. Now, it's pretty clear the American public doesn't want electric cars. They just don't want them. And it's not just because of the ritual of having to recharge them, or it's not just because of the environmental hazards that they pose, because they do pose many, not the least of which is the poisoning of the earth with the lithium-ion batteries. Because how do you recycle these things? Nobody knows. We still don't know what to do with the batteries when they're depleted. That is an environmental nightmare. Plus, electric cars are so much heavier than gas-powered cars, and they emit more rubber byproducts into the air because they tear up the tires. So the human element here is such that we're not as dumb a breed of public as we were 50 years ago. We live in the information age. So the pros and the cons of EVs is getting out on a daily basis. And it's being borne out now by surveys and polls, thanks to certain car clubs. Over the weekend, a good friend of mine, Bill Coliani, we've known each other for, decades. We're both automotive fans. We're gearheads. He and I were members of the same Pontiac Club for a number of years. He owned a succession of Firebirds and Transams. Today, he drives a Mustang, understandably. Today, I drive a Dodge Charger. Well, he sent me an article from a website called hotcars.com. And the title of the article is, Dodge Fans Reject Electric Muscle Cars. Opt for Gas-Powered 2024 Charger in New Poll. Okay, now... This is more, the reason I'm doing this story is this is more about what's really happening in the war against gas-powered cars that has been waged by our current government. This war will be over once Donald Trump is in the White House. This war will be over. But I want to point something out to you with this article. I'm going to read parts of the article. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but I'm going to read parts of it. Because what's at play here is the wisdom of the American public, the American driving public, and the stupidity of our government. So the article starts off by saying, soon enough, the 2024 Dodge Charger Daytona will arrive as the world's first and only electric muscle car. While the brand hasn't completely abandoned its aspirations for engine-powered vehicles, it seems convinced that EVs are indeed the future. However, Charger fans don't seem to share the same conviction as Dodge and prefer the gas-powered muscle car, according to a poll conducted by MoparInsiders.com. Now, Mopar is the parts division of the Chrysler Corporation, has been for, geez, since Christ was a corporal. And right away, this points out the wisdom of the automotive buyer, the American public. What are we buying? Now, you look at the lots of the EV retail centers around the country, and they're full of EVs. Nobody's buying the things. Yeah, you get a couple of trendy people who want to be cool, or they want to drive down the street and send their little eco message. Look at me, I'm driving an electric car. Well, bully for you. You're polluting the atmosphere more than I am with my Dodge Charger. But this is a battle that has to play out, and it's going to play out in the marketplace, not in the government sector. It's going to play out in the marketplace. So the article continues, Dodge is presenting the next generation of the Charger not just as an EV, but as its first multi-energy muscle car. Well, of course, they have to do this. Otherwise, they're not going to have any customers in the dealerships. Goes on to say, the 2024 Charger marks a significant departure from Dodge's traditional approach, as it'll be available both as an EV and as a conventionally powered model. Dodge has named the EV version the Charger Daytona and the ICE-powered model the Charger Six-Pack. Now, ICE, that stands for internal combustion engine, okay? Interestingly, Dodge appears to be favoring the Charger Daytona, as the electric muscle car holds a power advantage over the Charger Six-Pack models. The brand even claims that the higher-end variant of the electric muscle car, the 2024 Dodge Charger Daytona Scat Pack, remains the world's quickest and most powerful muscle car. And that may very well be true. But it's electric powered. And American drivers don't want an electric car. So here you have a case of the corporate sector trying to determine, just like the government. I mean, they're marching in lockstep with the government, trying to force you into a product you don't want. And it says, despite Dodge's marketing efforts for the electric Daytona, fans overwhelmingly, did you catch that word? Overwhelmingly favor the six-pack version, the ICE version, which will be powered by Stellantis' new 3-liter twin-turbo Hurricane engines. Now, I've read a lot about those engines, and I understand they are extremely powerful. In a poll conducted by MoparInsiders.com over several weeks, with its social followers, around 86% of Charger fans who participated in the survey stated that they would prefer the Charger Six-Pack, the gasoline-powered model, over the Charger Daytona. I don't find anything in there surprising at all. Not at all. Now, how does the vehicle look? Pretty snazzy. The Charger is back to being a two-door, but it's a very snazzy vehicle. Now, back to the article. It says, Dodge has somehow nerfed the power levels of Hurricane versions, that's the gasoline-powered engine, of the Charger compared to the previous Hellcat power generation. Nevertheless, the Hurricane Cord Charger 6-packs still offer better horsepower and torque numbers than the previous generation Chargers with the 5.7 and 6.4-liter Hemi engines. Moreover, this means the internal combustion engine remains alive in the next-gen Charger. Well, frankly, it's going to have to remain alive. Otherwise, you won't have customers in the showroom. Then it goes on to say, marked as a two-door model, the Charger 6-Pack HO, which stands for High Output, will arrive with the 3-liter twin-turbo Hurricane high-output engine, offering 550 horsepower of max output. On the other hand, the 4-door Dodge Charger 6-pack SO will have, that to be standard output, will have the 3-liter twin-turbo Hurricane standard output engine under its hood, delivering 420 horsepower of max output. But both ICE options pale in comparison to the Charger Daytona 6-pack. So they're trying to convince people to buy an EV by making the EV more powerful than the ICE-powered version. And I'm here to tell you, my friend, mark my words, that is not going to work. I find it interesting that they are going to offer a 4-door version of the Charger. And that's cool. Mine's a 4-door. I like it. So, we're going to go on to the electric vehicle here for a second. Featuring a 400-volt propulsion system, not the Banshee 800-volt system, with two electric drive modules and a 100.5-kilowatt battery pack, the Charger Daytona is primed for all-wheel drive electric performance. In the Charger Daytona Scat Pack, the system delivers 630 horsepower and 627 pound-feet of torque, but a direct connection Stage 2 kit increases the figures to 670 horsepower. In the Charger Daytona RT, the system delivers 456 horsepower and 404 pound-feet of torque. The numbers surge to 496 horsepower with the Direct Connection Stage 1 upgrade kit. Now, don't worry if I lost you in the technicality. That's not the important part here. The thing is that on the corporate level, what they're trying to do is they're trying to bribe you into buying the EV. And they're trying to bribe you with more power. But here again, it'll be a heavier vehicle. And come time to replace the battery, you're looking at tens of thousands of dollars to replace the battery. Well, I don't keep a car that long. Okay, maybe you don't. But when you trade the car in, the depletion level of the battery at the time of trade-in is going to factor into how much you get for that trade-in. See? See where this is going? Again, the government and the corporate entities are trying to force us into buying a product we don't want. And according to Dodge, the Charger Daytona Scat Pack can go from 0 to 60 in 3.3 seconds and reach a quarter mile in 11.5 seconds with a top speed of 134 miles per hour. That is really moving along. The Daytona RT has less impressive figures, of course, clocking at 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds. And a quarter mile time of 13.1 seconds. But how many people are going to buy a vehicle for the purpose of drag racing? They're not. But there was this notation here. The Charger Daytona RT boasts a higher top speed of 137 miles per hour. How many people are going to drive that? You know, unless you're in Germany. Now, Dodge didn't provide any performance numbers for the Charger 6-pack. And while Charger 6-pack models with... That's the internal combustion engine. Those 6-pack models with power figures similar to the Charger Hellcat Red Eye would be very appealing. That would be a nice thing to have. Ask anybody who's into the car hobby. That's what it's all about. It's like I always say, there's no such thing as too much horsepower, right? So there are no indications yet the Dodge would offer a version like that. But if I were a betting man, I'd say eventually they will. They're going to have to, because it's all about how many units they sell. Oh, believe me, from the get-go, the ICE-powered vehicles are going to greatly outsell the EVs. So even if Charger fans, and there are a lot of Charger fans, it's one of the most popular cars in America right now, the Dodge Charger. And its sibling, the Challenger, which is being discontinued, at least temporarily. Again, if I were a betting man, I'd say the Challenger will be available again in a couple of years. But even if Charger fans are aware of the significant difference between the announced numbers for the Charger Daytona and the Charger 6-pack, that survey that MoparInsiders.com took shows that a great majority of them still strongly prefer ICE-powered versions. Now, the real question is, will those same fans back up the poll with their wallets? Well, only time's going to tell that. But yet again, if I were a betting man, I would say yes. My Cleveland, Ohio friend sent me some material that I want to read to you. Now, it is being attributed to Tim Allen, actor Tim Allen, although I'm not sure that that's actually the case, but it doesn't matter. These are some factoids you might want to hang your hat on prior to November. It says, here are some interesting points to think about prior to the November election, especially to my friends on the fence, like moderate Democrats, libertarians, and independents, and the never-Trump Republicans, and those thinking of walking away from the Democratic Party. Women are upset at Trump's naughty words. They also bought 80 million copies of 50 Shades of Grey. Not one feminist has defended Sarah Sanders. Seems women's rights only matter to those women who are liberal. No border walls. No voter ID laws. Did you figure it out yet? But wait, there's more. Chelsea Clinton got out of college and got a job at NBC that paid $900,000 a year. Her mom flies around the country speaking about white privilege. And just like that, they went from being against foreign interference in our elections to allowing non-citizens to vote in our elections. President Trump's wall costs less than the Obamacare website. Let that sink in, America. We're one election away from opening borders, socialism, gun confiscation, and full-term abortion nationally. We're fighting evil. They, the Democrats, sent more troops and armament to arrest Roger Stone than they sent to Benghazi. 60 years ago, Venezuela was fourth on the World Economic Freedom Index. Today, they're 179th, and their citizens are dying of starvation. In only 10 years, Venezuela was destroyed by democratic socialism. Russia donated nothing to the Trump campaign. Russia donated $145,600,000 to the Clinton Foundation. But Trump was the one investigated. Nancy Pelosi invited illegal aliens to the State of the Union. President Trump invited victims of illegal aliens to the State of the Union. Let that sink in. A socialist is basically a communist who doesn't have the power to take everything from their citizens at gunpoint. Yet. How do you walk 3,000 miles across Mexico without food or support and show up at our border 100 pounds overweight and with a cell phone? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to ban cars, ban planes, give out universal income, and think socialism works. She calls Donald Trump crazy. Bill Clinton paid $850,000 to Paula Jones to get her to go away. I don't remember the FBI raiding his lawyer's office. I wake up every day, and I'm grateful that Hillary Clinton is and was not the president of the United States of America. The same media that told me Hillary Clinton had a 95% chance of winning now tells me Trump's approval ratings are low. The problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money. Which, by the way, is a quote from Margaret Thatcher. Maxine Waters opposes voter ID laws. She thinks that they're racist. You need to have a photo ID to attend her town hall meetings. President Trump said, they're not after me, they're after you. I'm just in their way. Think about that before you vote in November. Oh, and I'm sure you will. I'm sure you've already made up your mind. But certainly there's somebody in your family, a neighbor, somebody you work with that maybe you could pass this information along to, because believe me, this coming November election will be the most important election of our lifetimes, perhaps even the most important election in American history. Tom Ozimek, writing in the Epoch Times, says that Joe Biden may have trouble getting on the general election ballot in Ohio because of an apparent conflict in state law related to the timing of the Democratic National Committee's nominating process and a deadline for certifying the party's presidential nominee to the Ohio Secretary of State's office. I did not see this coming. But it shows you the intricacies of the American legal system. Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose flagged the issue in a letter sent to Ohio Democratic Chair Liz Walters a few days back, April 5th, which was obtained by several news outlets. Now, April 5th, when was that, Friday? Okay. So Mr. LaRose wrote in the letter that August 7th, 2024 is the deadline to certify a presidential candidate to his office. But the Democratic National Convention is scheduled for August 19th. So about a week too late for President Biden to appear on Ohio's general election ballot. Now, Ohio state rules indicate that officials of a political party must certify the name of their chosen presidential candidate on or before the 90th day before the day of the general election, which in the 2024 election cycle falls on November 5th, meaning the certification deadline falls on August 7th. So the fix, according to Mr. LaRose, is for the state's lawmakers to pass an exception or for the DNC to hold its nominating convention earlier, which they can't do. They've already booked the thing. So Mr. LaRose's legal counsel, Paul DeSantis, no relation to Ron because it's spelled differently, wrote in the letter, says, I'm left to conclude that the DNC must either move up its nominating convention or the Ohio General Assembly must act by May 9th, 2024, to create an exception to this statutory requirement. Well, neither the Biden campaign nor the DNC responded to any requests by the Epoch Times for comment, but a Biden campaign spokesperson told ABC that the campaign is confident in being able to resolve the issue, while the DNC told the outlet it's reviewing the letter. Oh, come on. You know they're going to resolve this one way or another. I mean, cash speaks volumes, right? Grease the right palms and you can accomplish anything politically. Biden faced no serious challenger, of course, for the party's nomination, which I still find just mind-boggling. You mean to tell me that in all of the Democrat Party, there's nobody better than Joe Biden? Well, this only points out what I've been saying for years, and that is that Barack Obama is the one running the White House. He's the one pulling the strings. He's the one behind Joe Biden and everybody who works for him. This is just nothing more than Barack Obama's third term. So, knowing that, you know they're going to fix this thing. Now, Biden's struggling, I mean really struggling, with incredibly low approval ratings. And he's been facing a lot of sharp criticism from both Republicans and Democrats for his handling of immigration policy as the number of illegal border crossings hit record highs during his administration. And those record highs are getting higher and higher. So his apparent ballot challenge that's emerged in Ohio comes as the Biden campaign actually announced that they'd raised $90 million in March, bringing his war chest to $192 million cash on hand. But by contrast, the Trump campaign closed out the month of March with $93.1 million in its coffers, with a March haul of $65.6 million. But over the weekend, Donald Trump raised another $50 million. What was that, Saturday night? I mean, that is nothing to sneeze at. So anyhow, President Biden and Trump are poised to face off. And even though I've been hearing things like Biden's going to be pulling out in May, for now, it's still going to be a rematch of the 2020 election. How about that $50 million over the weekend for Donald Trump, huh? Isn't that something? Actually, it was $50.5 million. And he almost doubled Biden's record-breaking haul of $26 million. Hedge fund billionaire host John Paulson said in an email on Saturday night that the event has now claimed the position of being the most successful political fundraiser in U.S. history. Wow, that's worth noting. All right, so let's read the email. He said, tonight we raised an historic $50.5 million for the re-election of Donald Trump. This sold-out event has raised the most in a single political fundraiser in history. This overwhelming support demonstrates the enthusiasm for President Trump and his policies. Well, yeah. I mean, Trump's policies were excellent, and we knew it at the time. But what's really convincing people today of Trump's policies are Biden's policies. I mean, this man is summarily destroying the entire nation. Now, they dubbed the fundraiser the Inaugural Leadership Dinner, and it was held at Mr. Paulson's $110 million home in Palm Beach. Nice digs. And co-chairs of the event included Robert Bigelow, head of the Las Vegas-based Bigelow Aerospace, Howard Lutnick, chairman and CEO of financial services company Cantor Fitzgerald. That's a big outfit, very big outfit. Robert Mercer, former co-leader of hedge fund Renaissance Technologies. Phil Ruffin, owner of Las Vegas's Treasure Island and Circa Circus Hotel Casinos. And Wynn Resorts Limited founder Steve Wynn. Oh, you can always count on him. Good guy, Steve Wynn. And he served as the RNC's finance chair from 2017 to 2018. And President Trump was in attendance alongside his wife, Melania. Mr. Paulson's girlfriend, Alina D. Almeida, was also at the event, as well as former Republican presidential hopefuls, Tim Scott and Governor Doug Burgum, and Ohio businessman Vivek Ramaswamy. Now, remember those names, too, because these names will show up in the new Trump administration. They will. Tim Scott, he's from South Carolina, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, and Vivek Ramaswamy of Ohio. He's from Columbus, Ohio. So this is a big deal. And before walking into the fundraiser, Trump said of America, "We're the laughingstock all over the world. We're going to get that changed very quickly. And this has been some incredible evening before it even starts, because people, they wanted to contribute to a cause of making America great again, and that's what's happened. We're going to make America great again. Everyone knows it." And that statement right there, everyone knows it, that's not just rhetoric. It has become painfully obvious that another term with Joe Biden or the Democrats in general will totally destroy this country beyond any form of repair that could be administered. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner with Karen Morgan.
So I see we have a lot of generations here tonight, which I love, because I love seeing different age groups. What's interesting now is that the generations are kind of fighting amongst themselves, like the boomers are upset with the millennials and the millennials are mad at Gen Z. So sometimes it's confusing as to, first of all, which group we're in and who we're supposed to be mad at. So I'm going to help y'all. Our oldest generation right now is called the silent generation. These people were born between the 1920s and 1940s. They're called the silent generation because when they were kids, they were to be seen and not heard. These are my in-laws. They're in their 90s. These are the people that still cook with lard and are afraid of microwave ovens. My in-laws have been married for 65 years. And apparently, if you've been married that long, you no longer have the ability to hear the sound of the other person's voice. Because I go to their house, they both talk to me at the exact same time, two completely separate conversations. And I don't want to be rude. They're my in-laws. They're sweet people. So I try to go back and forth to both conversations, which is like having a conversation with somebody with a wandering eye. You don't know. You don't know which one to get in, right? You don't know which is the right one. So I usually go with my father-in-law because his stories are better. He likes... They really are. He likes to talk about the war against the squirrels in their backyard. He's fighting a war. He's spent $1,000 to save maybe $3 worth of bird food, I swear. He's got aluminum sheeting up all over the trees, and he has electrified their bird feeders. Awesome. So what happens is the little squirrel comes along and he's just trying to get lunch, and it will spin and electrify it and zing it off. And my father-in-law sits there all day with his binoculars. Look, here he comes, here he comes. Here he comes. Woo, there he goes. Woo! And he's the happiest man on the face of the earth.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.